हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so page 4. Overview of the six schools of Vedanta. Introduction. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 25-56. In his Amrita Pravaha Bhashya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the following summary of the six philosophical processes. Prakashananda admitted that Sripad Shankaracharya, being very eager to establish his philosophy of monism, took shelter of the Vedanta philosophy and tried to explain it in his own way. The fact is, however, that if one accepts the existence of God, one certainly cannot establish the theory of monism. For this reason, Shankaracharya refuted all kinds of Vedic literature that establishes the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. In various ways, Shankaracharya has tried to refute the Vedic literature. Okay. Throughout the world, 99% of the philosophers following in the footsteps of Shankaracharya refuse to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead, they try to establish their own opinions. It is typical of mundane philosophers to want to establish their own opinions and refute those of others. Right? So, to establish monism, he took shelter of Vedanta, because being the highest philosophy, it can defeat all other philosophies. But to be able to establish monism, then he has to remove the element that Vedanta so nicely establishes of the personality of Godhead. Right? So then he will have to interpret it in his own way. Right? So that's what he's done. But basically, all he's done is used Vedanta to explain Buddhism, basically is what he's done. Right? So then he has to refute all the other Vedic literatures that naturally also establish the personality of Godhead. Right? Does that make sense? So, you know, as you're pointing out, those who follow Shankaracharya, they don't accept that the God's a person. They all say he's Brahman. Like that. So it's just a general thing. He's just saying it's typical of mundane philosophers. They just want to establish their own opinion. They all do it. Right? So then here he gives. Therefore, 1. The Mimamsaka philosophers, following the principles of Jaimini, stress fruit of activity, and say that if there is a God, he must be under the laws of fruit of activity. In other words, if one performs his duties very nicely in the material world, God is obliged to give one the desired result. According to these philosophers, there's no need to become a devotee of God. Right? Because, in other words, you don't have to become a devotee of God. You perform your fruit of activities, he has to give the result. Right, so they don't understand his independent position. They're kind of taking it that I'm the center of the universe, so my activity then has to get the result. So in other words, I control God by my activity. When strictly follows moral principles, one will be recognized by the Lord, who will give the desired result. Right, it means you're recognized by the Lord just because of your good work. Right, so in other words, God's impressed by moralistic activity or proper religious activity. It's not that this element of bhakti is what attracts him. Such philosophers do not accept the Vedic principle of bhakti yoga. Instead, they give stress to following one's prescribed duties. 2. Atheistic Shankya philosophers like Kapila analyze the material elements very scrutinizingly and thereby come to the conclusion that material nature is the cause of everything. They do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes. 3. Nyaya philosophers like Gautama and Kanada have accepted a combination of atoms as the original cause of the creation. In other words, atoms are there. When they combine together, you get the various manifestations. And when they dissolve, then there's dissolution. But why it would come together and go apart, that's not really being explained. Just that that's what's happening. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, well, the milkshake seems to be happening simply because it's inside this thing and whizzing around. That's the cause of the milkshake. Right? But, you know, that there's a person standing next to it, you know, with their glass, that doesn't figure into it. Right? You know, it's just that, you know, here it is. The blender is the cause of milkshakes. Okay? 4. Mayavadi philosophers say that everything is an illusion. Headed by philosophers like Astavakra, they stress the impersonal Brahman effulgence as the cause of everything. Right, so means all there is Brahman. If you think there's anything different from that, you're an illusion. Like that's the thing; it's not actually there. You know, that's their idea how they kind of get around having to deal with it. So they just it makes it very easy. You don't have to deal with it. 5. Philosophers following the precepts of Patanjali practice Raja Yoga. They imagine a form of the absolute truth within many forms. That is a process of self-realization. Right, so we see here is that Nyaya and Kanada that have been put together. So Nyaya and Vaisheshika, because they're both basically the same thing. Just one's more emphasis is on the Nyaya, one's more emphasis is on the atoms. So they come out being basically the same thing. Yes.
He started back in once and then goes down to Nyaya and then goes to Yoga.
No, it's just that. It's just because Jaimini is he's the prominent of all of these, other than the Mayavadis. So that we've already discussed the Mayavadis. But it's, because generally those are the two that you come across. You come across, Jaimini, means the fruit of workers, and you'll come across the Mayavadis. Those are basically what you come across. Very rare you come across someone who's following Shankya or Nyaya or Vaisheshika. And you also come across yogis, right? But generally, even the yogis, then they ascribe to Shankara philosophy. So it means their practice is yoga, but their philosophy is actually, monism, Shankara monism. All 5 of these philosophies completely reject the predominance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and strive to establish their own philosophical theories. However, Srila Vyasadeva wrote the Vedanta Sutra and, taking the essence of all the Vedic literature, established the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All 5 kinds of philosophers mentioned above understand that impersonal Brahman is without material qualities. And they believe that when the Personality of Godhead appears, he is contaminated and covered by material qualities, right? But it's not a contradiction because impersonal Brahman doesn't have any material qualities. There's only spiritual qualities. So the problem is they're correct that Brahman has no material qualities, but what they're incorrect is that Brahman has spiritual qualities. That's why they can't reconcile the Personality of Godhead, having form and the concept of Brahman, because they actually have a mundane concept of Brahman. It's not even a transcendental concept of Brahman, because transcendental concept of Brahman would mean that it is with transcendental qualities, right? So then, if it's impersonal, that's fine. And then when it becomes personal, then it's also fine, right? Because qualities are there. So it's, in other words, unmanifest qualities is impersonal. Manifest qualities are personal. Like if I say greatness, that's impersonal, right? But you can appreciate the principle of greatness. But then you can have an example of greatness. That's a manifestation. So that's the personal. Does that make sense? Like that. The technical term used is saguna. They speak of saguna Brahman and nirguna Brahman. For them, nirguna Brahman means the impersonal absolute truth without any material qualities. And Saguna Brahman means the absolute truth that accepts the contamination of material qualities. All right, so they don't understand Saguna Brahman means transcendental. They just automatically, because of their mundane viewpoint, means material has form and qualities and is contaminated, so therefore form and qualities means contamination, right? Does that make sense? It's like saying, you know, health, the person has bad health, all you see is, you work in a, you know, at a hospital, all you see is bad health. So therefore, you know, health means bad, right? There's no such thing as good health. They have no concept of it.
It's, Maharaj says, kripana?
Kripana, yeah. Yeah, basically. More or less, this kind of philosophical speculation is called Mayavad philosophy. The fact is, however, that the absolute truth never has anything to do with material qualities, because he is transcendental and he is always complete with full spiritual qualities. The five philosophers mentioned above do not accept Lord Vishnu as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are very busy refuting the philosophies of other schools. There are six kinds of philosophical processes in India. Because Vyasadeva is the Vedic authority, he is known as Veda Vyas. His philosophical explanation of the Vedanta Sutra is accepted by the devotees, as Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. The ultimate goal of studying all Vedic literature is the acceptance of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Krishna consciousness movement is propagating the philosophical conclusion of Srila Vyasadeva and following other great acharyas like Ramanuja, Madhva, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. So here is then establishing, basically you have, it means six schools, so five are bogus, where you're taking it, where Gotama and Vaisheshika are counted as basically one group because there's hardly any difference. And so, and then all the others, so Shankara's monistic Vedanta is counted as the fifth. Right? Does that make sense? And so then Vyasadeva's Vedanta, that's the sixth. So then in that way you can say there's five bogus schools and one proper school. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, we can say, sometimes it's also referred to as the six schools of you know, improper philosophy. But that means then you're counting Gotama and Vaisheshika separately and Shankara as the sixth. Then there's Vyasadeva, because it's not contradictory, because still Vedanta is in the sixth place. It's just it can be interpreted in the wrong way, so then you get the bogus. And then if it's interpreted in the right way, then you get the proper. Yeah. Okay, so Advaita Vedanta of Shankaracharya, 788 to 820 AD. Sambandha. Ultimate reality according to Shankara is Brahman or Atma, which is Advaita, Advaya, one without a second. Right? Like that. So we don't have any problem with that. It means that Brahman is one without a second. It means there is nothing superior to Brahman, right? Because Brahman is Krishna. So there's nothing superior to himself. But within himself, he has superior aspects. You know? Does that make sense? Right. So, in other words, the non-manifest is the Brahman. The manifest is the Bhagavan. Okay. Nothing at all exists besides Brahman. We'll also say that. Right? The problem is they'll say it's that by a one without a second, meaning there's only Brahman and there is no personal form. Because they can't accept qualities. That's the problem. So that's where it goes wrong. And nothing exists besides Brahman. We'll also say that. All there is Krishna. But they'll say all there is Brahman, there is no forms. Right? Whether inside it, as its part or attribute, or outside it. Brahman is nirguna, or devoid of all attributes. And nirvishesh, being devoid of all attributes, is still an attribute. Right? If we say the guy's without culture, that's his attribute. You know, it's cultureless. Or we say it's dark, that's the attribute. You know, or you can look at it the other way. To say it has no attributes means there has to be such a thing as attributes. And why would he be comparing Brahman to something mundane if it's transcendental? So it should have its own ability to explain. In other words, the mundane should be explained in relationship to Brahman, not the other way around. It is pure consciousness, jnana sarupa, a pure unity, absolutely homogeneous. So these are all qualities, but they only accept this many. In other words, their idea is limited qualities. Right? Brahman is beyond speech and mind. Right? That's why it would be good if they stopped talking. Right? It is indescribable because no description of it can be complete. Therefore, further why they should stop talking. The best description of it is through the negative formula of neti, neti. So then they'll agree, okay, you can't describe, so we'll get at it from the other way. But the point is, it's still it's intellect, so Brahman is beyond all this. So it's a problem. Shankara's Advaita philosophy may be summarized in this sentence. Brahma satyam jagan mitya, jivo brahmaiva na paraha. Brahman is the only reality. The world is ultimately false and the individual soul is non-different from Brahman. But if Brahman is an undifferentiated entity and nothing else exists besides him, how the appearance of the physical world and individual beings are justified? To answer this question, Shankara introduces the theory of different states of existence and the theory of Maya. Right? So he has to introduce something, right? Because it's unnatural. He's trying to establish something without, right? Yes.
This sentence is from Vedanta Sutra?
No, I think this is his, Brahma Satya Jagan Mitya. Generally, most devotees quote that much. They don't, this Jivo Brahmaiva Na Paraha. I don't think it's, because he says ultimately false. But the point is it's not ultimately false. It's false in the sense of we see it not in relationship to Brahman. Right? That's the point. It's because you see it separate from Brahman, that's what the illusion is. And they see it separate from Brahman, so they're an illusion. That's why Mayavadi. Right? But the point is it's in connection with Brahman. So ultimately it's connected to Brahman. The problem is we think it's not connected to Brahman. That's why it's Maya. Does that make sense?
Maybe his sentence, because
the
document
is
false.
Yeah, I think it's their point. But this is one of the famous ones. The Mayavadis come as, you know, we got the Mahavakyas. So other than that, you always hear this one. Brahma Satyam Jagad Mitya. Okay, so now, to answer this, because it doesn't make sense, so he has to introduce the theory of different states of existence and the theory of Maya, right? So he's has to add. The theory of different states of existence. According to Shankara, there are three states of existence. Paramartika, Vyavaharika, and Pratibhashika. Paramartika. The absolute existence or reality on the level of Brahman is called Paramartika. In this state of pure existence, there are no forms, no individuality, no activity, and no sensation. It is a state of pure consciousness, nirguna Brahman. Right? But the point is you can have all this. It means the Brahman is appreciated through the forms through which it manifests. The individuality of the Lord, the living entity, still remains, and of the energies. The activity is the interaction of the energies where you can appreciate it. And no sensation, one gets a sensation. It means if there's no sensation, where would Brahmananda come from? Right? If they're saying it's so nice being absorbed in Brahman, then how do they explain Brahmananda if there's no sensation? So if there's no sensation, there is no Brahmananda. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the problem, right? But you know, generally, because they want to be happy, no one worries about that one, right? The paramartika just means the absolute reality, right? It means parama, artika. It means parama. What's the supreme artika? What's the gain? Right? Like the. It means the school, the original school of the academy is the Sri Rupanuga Paramartika Vidyapit. Right? So that's the name given by Prabhupada. Okay. So it's just, you know. Vyavaharika. The practical or empirical reality of this world is called Vyavaharika. From the phenomenal point of view, the world, which is mere appearance, or superimposition. in Brahman, due to Maya, is quite real. It is like a dream. Things seen in a dream are quite true as long as the dream lasts. They are sublated only when we are awake. Similarly, the world is quite true as long as the true knowledge does not dawn. Right? In other words, we perceive it as true. Brahman associated with its potency, Maya, appears as the qualified or Saguna Brahman. The Saguna Brahman is Ishwara God, who is the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this world. So what it's saying here is that Brahman associated with this potency, Maya, then takes on Saguna, because now it's with quality. But then it is something of this world. But then that means, then how would it be Brahman? How would it be superior? Right? That's the difficulty. If it's actually just made of illusion, where's the Brahman aspect? If it's controlled by that, where is its supremacy? Right? So it's kind of a weak. But you know, if you say it, generally people don't catch it, right? Because they don't sit and analyze it. Okay. To the Advaitavadis, Ishwara is the Apara Brahman or lower Brahman. In spite of being considered to be a product of Maya, Ishwara is the master of Maya. Right? How are you the master of Maya if you're created by Maya? So that means it's when they say it's pastimes of Brahman, it's actually in this case then by actual definition a pastime of Maya, that she creates someone who's superior to her. You know what I'm saying? If this is true. So what has it got to do with Brahman? So it's not actually Brahman. But they're saying it's in lower Brahman, but it's Brahman. But Maya's illusion. But Brahman's supposed to Brahman Satya Jagan Mitya, the Maya's illusion. Does that make sense? So it doesn't work in their definition.
How is that indifferentiated Brahman becomes higher and lower?
That's also another point. If it's Brahman, it's undifferentiated. So that means the whole thing has problems. Because he's tried to take Vedanta, which establishes very clearly the personality of Godhead and the transcendental rule, you know, the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. So they're trying to use a philosophy that's what it describes and use it to describe, you know, only a portion of that, just the impersonal. But in such a way that the rest of it doesn't exist, because for the material world to actually have existence, in reality, you have to accept the personality of Godhead. Therefore, the jivas as persons are trying to enjoy, imitate, and enjoy like God. Right? So because they can't accept the one, you can't get the other. So all the left is Brahman. And so they have to come up with some stupid things. But the mechanics of Brahman, of the Vedanta is so good that you can, its arguments can defeat all the other philosophies. So that's the advantage of it. Because at the time, he had to defeat karma and, karma and Buddhism. Right? Like that. So, and karma can defeat all the others. So the only thing more technically practical to use is Vedanta. Right? Otherwise, you'd just be another branch of karma, because you need that to defeat the others. And Buddhism can't defeat, you know, technically any of them. You know? Does that make sense? Because it doesn't. Where's the basis of it? So that's the problem. So within the Vedic culture, you won't be able to use it. Okay.
It's like your spiritual goth.
Spiritual goth.
Outcast.
Oh, means this
Buddhist,
lower Brahman?
The Buddhist, no, the Buddhist.
Oh, the Buddhist. Yeah. But then you're saying that goths aren't, you know, mainstream alternative. And then you're saying alternative is an alternative rather than alternative is actually the mainstream. The mainstream is actually, you know, not actually an alternative. That's why it's not called alternative. Because the mainstream doesn't really work. The alternative works. Otherwise, it would be an alternative.
I hadn't thought through
the last. No, see, you have to think about these things. Right? <You know. laughs> In spite of being considered to be a product of Maya, Ishwara is the master of Maya. The magician who produces illusory appearances of physical objects and living beings by his incomprehensible magical power. So now here's something incomprehensible, but at the same time, why not spiritual is incomprehensible? So somehow or another, that doesn't. Ishwar has been a taxing problem for the followers of Shankara. Right? According to some, Ishwar is the reflection of Brahman in avidya. According to others, Brahman, limited or conditioned by Maya, is Ishwara. Frank says then, so in other words, there's a reflection, but the point is if there's only Brahman, it has to be reflecting on itself, so that means the illusion would have to be itself. But because it can't be itself, it can't be non-dual, it has to be something else. So these are big problems for them. Or it's that Brahman himself is then limited and controlled by Maya. Or the internal organ, Atakarana, or Upadis, which is the prakta of Vidya, is Jiva. Right, so the mind is the Jiva, like that. Because the body, we're not the body, so okay, we're not that. But then the point is then the Jiva, because they're not accepting the soul. So since it's not the body, then we have to say it's the mind. Right? You know, and that's kind of how, you know, people who think about it more, when you think about it, they'll say they're the body. But if you really get into it, then they understand the body's there, the person's left. So what's left, then they'll take it's the subtle body. Right? So there's not an actual knowledge of the soul. They'll say soul, but they actually mean the subtle body. That makes sense? So it's a pretty common amongst the materialists. Because all materialists think that lives come from matter. Right? All of them. Only the Vaishnavas understand soul is beyond. That makes sense?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking that in some languages like Russian and Hebrew, they have two definitions of soul. It means that the one that lives, but in English doesn't exist, it's just soul.
Mm-hmm.
But in those two languages, they have specific for what is going out and what's eternal, like
mm-hmm.
like spirit soul.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow English is just soul.
Yeah, well, I guess that's right, yeah. Probably use spirit soul so you get the understanding. Yeah. Because he had to coin phrases, because they don't have, like Paramatma.
Yeah.
Or super soul.
Yeah.
Right, you know, spirit soul, super soul. You know, they just don't have terms.
And those languages, means the culture has those things,
mm-hmm.
but they're just uncovered. People don't think enough about why those terms exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's very defined.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's there. Means you have to, these languages were there before.
Yeah.
And English is a derivative of them. It doesn't really stand on its own. You know, somehow or other, something got lost in the translation. You know. Ishwar is limited by his own power of nescience and appears as many phenomenal selves. Like the space appears as different spaces limited by the adjuncts of jars, pots, etc. Right? So they're trying to say is that Ishwar is there and he's limited by this space. And then you have the element of the jivas that they're even a portion of that. Just like you have jars and pots, they all have a limited amount of space. So they would count those as the individual jivas. You know, but if it worked like that, you know, then we'd have, it means the problem, why aren't the pots coming to life, you know, like that. Like that, you know. So, yeah, guy's sitting there, he's got his clay there, right? You know, so that, and then you bring it up, you know, you catch some ether like that. He cuts it off, he puts it on the ground, he goes to do the next one, and the thing walks off. Yeah, that would be, yeah. The omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotence of Ishwara are all due to the adjuncts of ignorance. But at the same time, yeah, they are not ultimate. But then the problem is, what does that mean? The Brahman is there, because they can use all-pervading, you know, all so many things, you know, that Brahman is knowledge. But somehow or another, when they bring omnipresent, omnipotence, omniscience, where it brings it into the personal, they'll say those qualities are bogus. That's illusion. But these other qualities are okay. Right? So anything that infers person. You know, in other words, when you start getting close to Paramatma, then those ones are bogus. But if it's not with Paramatma, it's within what do you call it?
Brahman.
Then, you know, seemingly, then it's okay. They are not ultimate. When the essential unity of the Atma is realized, they all vanish. Creation, therefore, is due to ignorance. It is not ultimately real. Right? So they're saying it's because you think like that, therefore it's there. Just like in a dreaming state, you're creating all these things. But when you realize, when you're awake, there's no more dream. That's kind of their idea. You know, so it sounds good. But the point is it's still you're awake. Maybe you're not the dream, but you're still a living entity who's awake. It's not that as soon as you wake up, you disappear, right? You know, that'd be the problem. You really delicately have to wake people up, but not too much, because if you wake them up too much, they poof, disappear, you know? Like that. Oh, man. I wanted to take out the garbage. You're stuck. Right? So you only partially wake them up, enough that they can go out and take out the garbage. However, Ishwara becomes unreal only for one who has realized his oneness with Brahman by rising above speech and mind. So that means, so now what they're trying to say is, because getting the things, because you can't meditate on something that's formless. So this element that there is a superior element, that there is Ishwara, then as long as you're conditioned, then that's essential. So then they're bringing out only ones who has realized this oneness, then Brahma, Ishwara becomes unreal. But otherwise, if you're still conditioned, you have not real, then he's real. So this is how they're creating these levels of existence, right? Because this is the Vyavaharika. So they have to show how the existence is real. That's why you're dealing with it. That's why they're talking to you. That's why they're making so much money at their seminars, is because, you know, you haven't become realized. Right? Does that make sense? Right? And neither have they, otherwise they would have disappeared and then they wouldn't have this problem. Right? Okay. For us, conditioned souls, Ishwara is all in all. Right? So now they're saying, yes, no, you worship, you're good, like this. They encourage and all that. And you can worship through jnana, through karma, through bhakti. It doesn't matter. You know, they're cool, you know. Whatever you're into. Yeah, like that. But when you become realized, that's their trick. But the point is that doesn't work, right? Because the point is that Brahman that they're talking about doesn't exist, right? Like that. So for us, it's very easy because we understand that Brahman exists because it actually has qualities. So we can understand it. We can appreciate it. We can experience it. Well, they can't. Finite, though, thought can never grasp Brahman. And therefore, all talks about Brahman are really talks about Ishwara. Right? Even the words unconditioned Brahman refer really to conditioned Ishwara. For the moment we speak of Brahman, he ceases to be Brahman and becomes Ishwara. So that now again here is that interesting point is when I talk about him as you know, Brahman, he stops being Brahman and becomes Ishwara. So again, how is it I'm in control? You know, why is that? And so when I stop, then he can go back to whew, finally. I have to. It's such a trip every time after we go like this. No, it's just like, you know what I'm saying? It's so weird. Like that. Yes.
It must be very depressing to be always in illusion, like currently catch yourself that you're always like illusion because it's not real.
It's not real. Well, that's why generally you see is also when they do as general the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, generally they're worshippers of Shiva.
Because
of the mode of ignorance.
So that's the connection.
Yeah, because otherwise then it's all, he's also the Lord of Maya, so that's it, okay, then he's there. You know, so it makes it so much easier for them. Plus, he is Lord Shiva, so it kind of works out easier. You know, and that way then he can keep them busy, his gunas can keep them busy. You know? But it's kind of more connected there. Because generally they're not so much when they talk about worship. Generally when you see Mayavadis, they're not worshipping Vishnu. They're always worshipping Shiva or Shakti. Like that. Basically all. Ishwara God is Satchitananda. He is the perfect personality. He is the Lord of Maya. He is immanent in the whole world, which he controls from within. Immanent means, what is that? There's a very nice definition. But it has something to do with, it's not only being in, but it means he's obvious, even though he means, how you say, he's obvious, though he's not apparent, or something. There's some far out. Huh? Yeah, intrinsic. It's just like when you look at, let's say, a painting, you know, by one of the masters, then you can appreciate the nature of the painter in the painting. You know, so that's the imminent, like that. There's some very nice definition here. That's why it's a very good. It's because there's imminent. This it's different than eminent. Yeah. So there's three words that are very similar. They get mixed up, but this one is not used so much. Imminent just means it's obvious. You can tell. You know, you go into something, you can tell by the arrangements that this person did it, like that. It's just. Yeah. He is immanent in the whole universe, which he controls from within. He is the soul of the souls as well as the soul of nature. He is also transcendental, for with his own nature he transcends the universe. He is the source of everything. He is the final haven of everything. He is the concrete universal, the supreme individual, the whole, the identity and difference. He is the inspirer of moral life. He is the object of devotion. He is all in all, but only from the practical standpoint. Vyavaharika. Right. So this last paragraph is how they will define Ishwara. But the impersonal is higher. Right? So this is lower Brahma. So everything that we'll say, which is actually the higher, right? Then that's what they've done. So for us it's very easy to explain the two and they work together. But for them it's very hard. Because why would illusion be so perfect? Why would it do everything like this? Why would it be so scientific? It's just a dream. And why is it everybody's got the same dream? Now that's a real nightmare, right? If you have a dream and they have a dream, now that's a real nightmare. You know, so it's like you're sitting there, you know, on your bench and this, you know, this big monster, like, you know, dinosaur comes up. And, you know, and then the guy next to you goes, "Do you see that dinosaur?" Then you start to freak out. No? So that's just everybody say. So why would that be like that? Why would that, you know? So these kind of things are, because the point is the individual can then step out of it, and then all and Ishwara goes back to Brahman. So, but same time as that control is great. It means there's too many problems. Okay, Pratibhashika. The Pratibhashika state of existence is an imaginary existence. It was called by some commentary as the illusion of the illusion. The identification of the self with the body is prabhashika, existence. The identification of the self with the individual soul is vyavaharika, existence. While the identification of the self with the Brahman is paramartika, existence, the only real existence. Right? Does that make sense? The illusion of the illusion. So pratibhashika means you're taking the paramartika is that the pure state of Brahman. Right? So that's real. Then they're saying the illusion is vyavaharika, that there's the material world, there's all the rules, there's law, there's Ishwara and all that, you know, but at the same time it's that we're not the body. So does that make sense? So then pratibhashika is then the illusion of the illusion, that it's already, the idea is it's an illusion that there is an existence, and then it's an illusion within this existence that I'm this body. You understand? So in this way they're able to explain the realized, you know, those who have some understanding, and then the gross materialist. Rather than just the gross materialist, he thinks he's that, but he's covered by illusion, by Maya. But this Maya is controlled by the Supreme Lord. So one can come to that spiritual platform, but beyond the spiritual platform is the transcendence. Right? So we'll put the karma and jnana together in as Maya. Right? Does that make sense? So we would count the like that. But then there's beyond. Paramartika will be beyond Brahman. Yeah. It means it includes. Brahman is the lower state of that, just like karma is the lower state of, you know, it means the fruit of worker is the lower state of consciousness. The jnani is the higher state. Does that make sense? But it's still all Maya. And then in the spiritual, then there is the Then there's the lower aspect, lower Brahman, which is just Brahman, and the higher, which is the personality of Godhead. Okay, so that was, so this is how they're trying to explain, what was it? Brahman is an indifferentiated entity and nothing else exists besides him, how the appearance of the physical world and the individual beings are justified. To answer this question, Shankara introduces the theory of different states of existence and the theory of Maya. So that was the different states of existence. In other words, real, illusory, and illusion on the illusion. So now, theory of Maya. According to Shankara, Maya, or avidya, is not only absence of knowledge. It is also positive wrong knowledge or illusion. Okay, so absence of knowledge, but you may have knowledge, or actually, but the knowledge is wrong knowledge or illusory knowledge. Therefore, it is a positive entity, bhavarupa, right? Because otherwise, then it's not existing. So then, it's just an illusion that there is an illusion, right? Because there isn't anything else other than Brahman. So they've made it. No, it's a positive illusion, right? But at the same time, it is not existent, because the only existent thing is Brahman. It's positive, but it doesn't exist. It's not negative and doesn't exist. It's positive and doesn't exist.
What's the difference?
The point is if they're conditioned, they talk, and the ones talking are conditioned, so therefore it doesn't work. Right? You know, that's the fun point, is that if you're conditioned, then you need all this. So then, what's the point of it all? Because it's all explained in the Vyavaharikas, but the Vyavaharika is already illusion. Okay, we understand that the illusion of the illusion, okay, that we think we're the body and like the animals. Okay, that's we're coming to the higher platform of understanding the difference and the subtleties and, you know, all the, you know, creation and all the different, whatever is explained in the Vedanta. But then to say is that it's all explained though through Vyavaharika. So the point is Brahman can't be explained. So how do we even know in the explanation that they're actually, by their own definition, that they're actually explaining Brahman? Because if Brahman can't be explained through Vyavaharika, then how do we know the Brahman they're describing is the real Brahman? Because they're describing it through words, and you can't describe it through words. So it's not actually so. That would indicate then, according to what we're saying, is that you can't understand, because if you do discuss it, you are working on the platform of Vyavaharika, though Bhagavan, of course, isn't, but we are. So that's why we're controlled by time and space. So it's only when the Lord's potency descends into the consciousness, then one is able to understand. Right? So it does define how you can't explain it, but then the problem is They have no way of explaining how actually what they're explaining is real. They're saying it's real, but I'm saying it from the Vyavaharika platform.
Does it mean what they describe is Maya?
Their description of Brahman has to be Maya, because, you know, scripture, you're speaking, everything is illusion. So that's why a real impersonalist doesn't talk. You know, like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like Sukadeva Goswami on the Brahman platform doesn't talk. There's no need to talk. What's there to say? Everything's Brahman. Brahman knows himself, so you don't have to talk. You know? So the difficulty comes is then, but when he deals on the transcendent, on the devotional platform, then he speaks. Right? So that's the thing, is that even by their own philosophy, they shouldn't be philosophizing. You know, that's the difficulty. But to be able to deal with this means you could, if you had this very well, you know, studied and all that, so you could function without their cooperation in this, right? In other words, if you want to discuss this and establish or defeat this philosophy, establish the Vaishnavism, it would have to be your understanding of it is so good, it doesn't depend upon their response. Because depending on their response means they're sincere, so they'll ask good questions that therefore you can speak on and gradually bring it up. Like we see
with the different person, you know, the different personalities in the Jiva Dharma. But the ones that weren't like that, it would just be they'd explain it and then stop, because there's no use to discuss further, because they're not going to respond correctly. They're just not going to. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't expect that you haven't understand the principle. You discuss with them. The problem is then they'll you know, in different terminologies and this and that, try to, you know, juggle everything so they, you know, make it bewildering. Because they don't have answers. Because the point is they're committed to what Shankara said, but what Shankara said doesn't make sense. He wrote it to bewilder the Buddhists. So if you bewilder the Buddhists, they stop being Buddhists. And there means Buddhist by the basis, you know, by their culture, by their you know, scripture, you know, their authority. So you bewilder them. Now they're Buddhists, but now their authority is the Veda, and they follow Vedic culture. You know, it says bewilder the Buddhists. It didn't say stop making them Buddhists. Otherwise, we'd use a different explanation, right? We'd say he you know, he destroyed Buddhism, or he removed the Buddhistic thought by establishing the Vedic. No, it says he bewildered the Buddhists. So the Buddhists actually thought that they had changed to something else when they're still Buddhists. You know, it makes it easy. It's much easier to accept something that you're already doing and then think that it's different. You know, does that make sense? You know, it's like you always go to the same restaurant, you know, so everyone's getting bored. So instead of going in the front door, you go in the side door, you know. So when you walk in the side door, you go, ta-da, you know, and everyone, oh, yeah, cool, yeah. You know, so, like that, you know, so that's bewildering the, yeah. So,
it seems that he did his job so good and he bewildered many other people as well.
Yeah. No, it's just that. But you see is that, but what they're attracted to or attached to is Buddhism.
Yeah.
Like that. It's just but the fun part is how the Buddhists and the Shankarites are like mortal enemies.
Yeah.
Like that. But actually they're just the same thing. You know. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you go to, what do you call it? You go to some of these countries and all the locals, they have all the little tribes. They fight with each other tooth and nail, kill each other, everything. But if another party comes from outside, they all go together and fight this one. But actually, they're the same. Yeah. Okay. Okay. It is, okay. According to Shankara, Maya or Avidya is not only absence of knowledge, it is also positive wrong knowledge or illusion. Therefore, it is a positive entity, bhava-rupa. But at the same time, it is not existent, because the only existing thing is Brahman. Also, by saying these things like this, you get so bewildered, no one really gets into thinking about it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if I say the door of no door, nobody asks, well, why a door? Why not the window of no window, or the couch of no couch, you know, or the bicycle of no bicycle, you know? It's like that. Why a window? You know, why a door? Like this, you know. So nobody asks these things, you know. So that's the whole thing. He says it's so bewildering that nobody actually, they just go, oh yeah, you know.
Angels on the head of the
pen. Yeah, angels on the head of the pen. Just something to bewilder, right? You know, like that. What is it? What? You know, Sunday's on the phone to Monday. Monday's on the phone to Tuesday. Tuesday on the phone to me. You know, it's kind of, oh yeah, cool. You know, so what does it mean? You know, is it? But nobody cares. He says, yeah, cool. Right? But that's the mode of ignorance, right? So they're in the mode of ignorance. So then you just say something wild, and they all sit back and go, "Wee, yeah," you know, like that. You know, the only difference, they don't have dark glasses and stuff like that. You know? They have incense burning, right? You know? But yeah.
Is that your stupefied?
Stupefied, yeah. Stupefied, yeah. But at the same time, it's not existent, because the only existent thing is Brahman. And it cannot be non-existent, for Maya has the power to create the appearance of the world in Brahman. Right? The only existence is Brahman, but it can't be non-existence because it's creating a separate existence within Brahman. Right? But that is still, illusion like that. In fact, according to Shankara, Maya is neither existent nor non-existent, nor both. He's got it covered here, right? It cannot be both existent and non-existent, for this conception is self-contradictory. Maya, therefore, is neither real nor unreal. Sat, asad, vilakshana. To solve this situation, Shankara says that Maya is anir vachaniya, or indescribable. Right? Because you get it to that point, then okay, then you leave it. But if Krishna's form is indescribable, Maya is also beginningless, anadi, but not endless, ananta. Right? Right, so then this is another thing. If one's worried about anadi, so that means it's Maya. So the point is, but then does the soul come from Maya? No, it's a different Shakti, so it can't come from there. Since it is cancelled in moksha, right? Endless means, anadi means this beginning, this Maya is cancelled in moksha, liberation. Maya is removed by Brahmajnana, the knowledge of the essential unity of the Jivatma and Brahman. When vidya dawns, avidya vanishes. Right? So in other words, at some point there has to be some faith, because everything will go to that point. Because there's the intelligence is limited. Even though Maya is limited, the volume of Maya is so much greater than us. We're 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair, right? While Maya is 1/4 of the cosmic manifestation. So that means the amount of Maya that's there is way more than we can conceive of. Right? So the thing is, at some point, whoever it is claiming that, it's all science, it's all knowledge, it's all, they have to have faith. You have to get into this point, there's something beyond what I can understand. Does that make sense? It's just how far they want to take it. Does that make sense? So even if they want to use that argument against us, but we're taking it farther than anybody else takes it. You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing less. But the point is that it's only by God's grace you can understand. Because you can't stuff a whole lot into 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Right? So therefore it's only by the spiritual grace of the Lord, then the living entity can appreciate the actual transcendental realm. Right? Or even to appreciate how Maya, because when you can understand Maya in connection with Krishna, then Maya becomes so much more understandable. Otherwise, unless you have some really good karma, then only you can understand some aspect of Maya. Therefore work with it, get some benefit. Does this make some sense? The world, then, does not have real existence. Okay. This world, then, does not have real existence. It is a mere appearance in Brahman. Right? Still, it's appearing in Brahman, though there's this illusion. But the point is, how does illusion appear in Brahman if there's only Brahman? Right? Due to the Brahman's magical creative power, Maya. But now it's Brahman's power. But then the point is if Brahman has power, that means it has qualities. Right? But if it's not Brahman, it's just illusion. How does illusion deal? How is illusion able to deal within Brahman? Right? So that becomes a problem there. The theory that the world is taken as an illusory appearance in Brahman is called by Shankara as Vivartavad. The theory of illusion. According to this theory, the relation between the cause and the effect is called Vivartavad, wherein the cause alone is real and the effect is illusory or a superimposition and hence unreal. Right? But does that make sense? So it's Vivarta is that the Brahman is real, the Maya is not real. Right? So that's the Vivartavad. But remember, there's that special group of Advaitists who then also use Paramartika. Vivarta? Parinamabha. Parinamabha. Means it's transformation. And unfortunately, it's been get into this so much, I don't remember. Anyone remembers?
It's Brahma
Parinamabad. But there was something, is that Brahman is transformed, so that means it's his energy.
Shakti.
Yeah, so it's his, it means he's transforming. No, because we're Shakti Parinamabad.
Yes, and they call themselves Brahma Parinamabad.
Yeah, they call themselves Brahma Parinamabad. So it means Brahman transforms. Because if you say just Maya, it's a transformation, meaning that it's just Maya. Where did Maya come from if there's only Brahman? But if you say it's Brahman, how can Brahman transform? So then they each have a problem. So it's only when we understand that it's Brahman's energy is transforming. But the problem is they don't accept that it's, here is saying it's his, their power, but the illusion, but then the problem comes is, where does this come from? You know? So here he's saying Brahman's magical creative power, Maya. So it's actually alluding to the Shakti Parinamabad. But how they explain it and all that, then it comes out as Vivarta. Right? So if you go underneath, you'll see is that there's hidden things where Shankara is actually explaining proper Vedanta, but the words and everything he uses are such, it comes out in this understanding.
The Christians, they get around it by saying that God moves in mysterious ways.
Yeah, God moves in mysterious ways. Yeah, everybody has something. At some point, everybody has to have something. Even the scientists have to have something. Right? You know, it's just like, how is it possible to stuff unlimited into an infinitesimal point that, you know, can't be measured? How is it possible to take that much mass and put it? It's impossible, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, and if you did, the heat and everything, it, you know, how would it explode? You'd end up with like some kind of very big stone, you know, some big diamond or something, you know. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's just weird. So at some point, they just have to just, it's inconceivable and all that. They just have to. The Vivartavad reduces all effects to mere appearances without any reality of their own. Therefore, when the substratum of a superimposition comes to be known, all superimposed appearances are consequently sublated, and the truth is revealed that the substratum, Brahman, alone is real. Then, the Advaita philosophy states that when Brahman is known as it is, the world of appearances is automatically switched off, and the underlying truth alone shines forth as the one and only reality. The classic example given are the rope snake and the conch shell silver. Right? Because it looks like it's a snake, but it's actually just a rope. So when one understands that, it just automatically goes to there. But the point is that why would you think it's a snake if there isn't such a thing as a snake? You know what I'm saying? You know, kids aren't talking about things that are unknown. You know, monsters under the bed, right? You know, they have heads, or, you know, maybe they only have one eye and they have big teeth, but they've seen teeth, they've seen eyes, they've seen horns. You know, they see baseball bats, right? You know, stuff like that. So that's what's under the bed, right? You know, and they slobber. Of course, they have to slobber. And they're always green, right? You know, spinach is green. That's bad. You know, monsters are bad, so they're green, right? You know, so it works out, right? No? Yes? Yeah, so the difficulty is that they're taking, okay, the Brahman's the underlying. But how is it the underlying through this energy? How does that come through? That's the problem. Is how is the substratum? It's in a, but why would that be there? Where would be the connection? Why is there the sense of reality unless there's reality? So if because Brahman is real, there's a sense of realness in here. So why wouldn't the element of the qualities there? Why wouldn't there be real qualities? Maybe the form that these qualities have taken are illusory because they're temporary. But why wouldn't there be original houses and trees and people and relationships? Right? Because the existence element is real. There is such a thing. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the... In a situation of half light, a rope on the ground may be mistaken by as a snake. And all psychological and emotional reactions take place in the person as the snake were real. This analogy is meant to show that although this world is not real, we, under the spell of Ajnana, think if it is real. That's good, but the problem is you know, what happens when that rope bites you, you know, like that, you know. That's the part where they don't take it to that far, right? You know, the illusory Mack truck did run over you. And your illusory body is somewhat like to a pancake, you know, so like that. Though pancakes are also an illusion, you know. So the whole thing, it's not quite, they don't take it far enough. The other example says that under certain conditions of luminosity and in certain angle, the mother of pearl of the conch shell appears like an object of silver. It is explained that the silver, although non-existent, was superimposed in the conch shell. Right, superimposed, but there's still silver that was superimposed, so the concept of snake is superimposed. Right? But the point is that there is real, just like Aropya Bhakti, it's the same thing of superimposing. That I look at something and I superimpose, means it's something to be used in Krishna's service, but I superimpose on it my own desire. Right? So because I think it's valuable, therefore that's why I'm using it in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So that's why, means we start there. It means you take your conditioning, whatever it is, and apply it on the environment around you, and then what's of value to you, use that in the Krishna service. But why you chose that as valuable is your conditioning. So you superimpose that this is valuable, but that's not. But it's either on the mundane platform, nothing's valuable, and if it's all Krishna, it's all valuable. You understand? So the point is, but there's real meaning there. The illusion is that not seeing it in connection with Brahman, not that it doesn't exist, right? So the problem with the examples is that there is snake, there is silver, and that's superimposed upon the snake on the rope or on the conch shell, right? You've experienced the snake. If a kid has never experienced a snake and he sees a rope, he doesn't think it's a snake. Right? So that's the problem. Right? So in other words, if you haven't experienced form, relationships, activities, emotions, then why in seeing the material illusory effect it's not that, you would think it's that. Does that make sense? So that's the point in there where the example has a problem. Because otherwise, why would you think it's a snake unless you've seen a snake and know what a snake can do? So you know, you've seen the spiritual world, you've seen spiritual form, spiritual interaction, the taste, everything like that. The illusion is you look at here, superimpose those on here. Right? It means here you have a temporary material body, but you think that's the soul. Because there, the body is the soul. You know what I'm saying? There you have actual interactions, so you think the ones here are. But it's just the bodies are interacting, the souls aren't. Because there, if the bodies interact, it's the souls interacting. Here the bodies interact, it's just the bodies interacting. You understand? So, we're saying that this is real because we have seen real. Otherwise, why would we superimpose? You know what I'm saying? So the point is because people want to think like this, and so as soon as you say these things, then they all go, yes. Right? Does that make sense? You want to, you just have that burning need to stand underneath a freezing cold waterfall and do your martial arts moves, right? So therefore they tell you the door of no door, and so then you can sit there and do all that and not be right. Does that make sense? You have that need. Yes.
Aren't the souls interacting with that as well?
That means not actually directly, because all it is it's like, let's say, you know, when kids, you have your doll and they have their doll, and the dolls interact and everything like that. But are the actual kids interacting? They're not actually. They're interacting through the dolls, but they identify with their dolls, therefore they're interacting. But they're not actually interacting. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? It's an extent, because they're not the body. So the body is, see, in other words, we're using the body. You know, like I say, oh, so you want to do this? Yeah, I would like to do this, like that. So we'll do like this. No, we're going to do it like that. And then it starts into a fight, right? You know, so like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it's...
Or should I have used the other one? Yeah, so, take some tea. Oh, yes, I'll have some tea. Like this and that. Like that. Depends on which direction you want to go with.
Neighborhood.
Yeah. Just imagine whether the boys are involved or it's just the girls. You understand? So, because the living entity thinks they're the body, and so if they're only the body, they're not actually interacting.
Okay, but once they recognize that
they're the soul, then devotees are interacting with devotees. There is soul to soul, but the medium is the body. But if we're attached to the interaction of the body to body, that's where the anxiety comes in.
Okay.
Does that make sense? But there is real interaction between devotees, like that. But it's through the medium. But for the others, they think the medium is the message. You know, it's one of those kind of stupid things. Is that one still around? Well, that one's quite dead. Okay. I guess that was a 90s thing. Maybe even an 80s thing.
So if you're saying that for the Maya body, the concept of the Maya,
How would it relate? Why would you have all this? Well, I mean, why does it have to be this complicated? You know, why can't it just be simple? Yeah, kids keep it simple, right? You know, why is it so complicated? You know, but whatever. So all that they can't explain. Yeah, it's a problem. Similarly, this world, though non-existent, is taken to be a superimposition or projection, adyasha, in Brahman. Right? It's superimposed on Brahman. But where does the concept come from in the first place? Right? That you would think that this is real. Because if the only reality is Brahman, why would you think something on Brahman would be superimposed? You know what I'm saying? If all you've ever seen is a rope, and all there is rope, there are no snakes, why would at any point you ever think it's a snake?
Right. Because actually there are an illusion that we can't see that this is my sense of illusion, temporary, that's Krishna the person, so they can't.
Yeah, no, they can't. That's the problem, because they've already taken it that form. Because in the material world you have form, and material is temporary. But the point is that doesn't mean that there isn't the real. That's why we use they say superimposed. That's why we say, reflected. It means you superimpose your values on it, because it's what it is. You know, it's a rock. You know, so for a kid, it's something you put in your slingshot. You know, like that. For David, it's how he, how you say. His nation is victorious. You know, for the gardener, it's just something there that makes it look nice. And for the farmer, it's a real annoyance. You know, does that make sense? So the point is you superimpose what's important to you, like that. But the thing is, it is a rock. So the point is if there's a rock here, that means there's a real rock somewhere else. That's the point. You know, because in the mirror. There's forms, so that means there's real forms. But to think that those are the real forms, you know, that they stand on their own as independent, that's an illusion. Does that make sense? So that's the point. If you go through the looking glass, you're still on the other side. Otherwise, how are you moving on this side? But they think I'm on this side, I'm not on that side. So that's the illusion. Right? Basically, it's called too much cocaine. That's the real point. Okay. Brahman, associated with its power, Maya, is the ground on which the phenomenal world is superimposed. Thus the world is not a transformation, parinama of Brahman, but is an appearance only, vivarta, right? Because they're trying to say it's not imposed. But the thing is the Maya itself, though it's imposed on Brahman, how does Maya have the potency to impose that? And why do we even worry about it? Because the point is, if it's only Brahman, it's just air in a pot. You know, and if there's no... Does the air in the pot care that it's in the pot? You know, air itself, does Varuna, Vayu, is he worried? You know? That's the thing. So why would there be any consideration anyway? If it's all like that, there's no need to discuss because it doesn't matter anyway. It's all an illusion. Right? So only if there's actual real identity, then it has a meaning. But if it's not, you know, then we're saying that, you know, if we're all Brahman, you have to convince Brahman that he's not an illusion. So that means then Brahman's under illusion? You know? And so that defeats the meaning of the description of Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, it's the whole thing becomes quite convoluted. Advaita philosophy does not admit that the individual soul, jiva, is ultimately real. This philosophy states that Brahman, the true self, is one, but it appears as many. The plurality of jivas, which is apparent to our ordinary experience, is accounted for on the basis of the upadis, or limited adjuncts. That means you can tell that they're there by the different, you know, forms and bodies and identities. Thus, all difference is due to ignorance. It is not ultimate. Names and forms are only figments of ignorance. So they're trying to say that, but we'll say that because the illusion on the illusion, yes, that's ignorance. It means all that is not the soul. But the point is the soul has reality. The soul has ultimate real existence. Right? So that's the difference. But that you'll find it here, that's illusion. It can only be found in the spiritual world. Basically, there are two theories which explain how Brahman has become many. Right? So this is, okay, within the what do you call it? The theory of Maya. So this is the Maya Vad. the Maya Vad, right? Okay. One, the one self appears as many because of the upadis, physical body, subtle body. Thus, for example, Akash or space is all pervasive in one. When this Akash is conditioned by various pots, we call them different Akashas. In the same way, there exists only one self, or Atma. In the same, when conditioned by different internal organs. Antakarana, or subtle body, appears as many as different jivas. This theory is called Apacheda-vad. It is ascribed to Vachaspati Misra, the author of Brahmati. Okay. The other theory is called Bimba Pratibimba Vad, or reflection theory. This is explained on the analogy of the reflection of the single moon in the waves of the ocean. Just as the single moon appears as many being reflected in the waves, likewise the self also appears as many being reflected in numerous internal organs or upadis. This theory was elaborated by Prakashatma, author of Vivarana, right? So these seem to be two major commentators on Shankara. So that's why Shankara is bad to read that. It's worse to read these guys' stuff because Shankara is just goofing on the Buddhists. But these guys actually think it's real, right? Because if it's Vivartavad, it's illusion. It's not real. But they are so an illusion that they think it's real, right? You know, that's the thing. They become illusioned by their own illusion. Abhidan Prayojana. Brahman is realized exclusively by jnana, not by karma or bhakti. The sadhana for Brahman realization or moksha is total vairagya, renunciation, and meditation in the Mahavakya, tattvamasi. Right, so that's their process, it's by jnana. So, in other words, using karma or bhakti is for the beginners, but once they become advanced, then you only work on this level. If, as the Mayavadis argue, God is an impersonal absolute that is indifferent to its worshippers, then God cannot be the goal of the Vedic religion. And if knowledge of God cannot be expressed in words, then God cannot be the goal of the text of the Upanishads either. Thus, the Mayavadis' conception of God undermines the very purpose of the Vedas. The Vedantists, or the four personal schools, therefore set out to establish a truly Vedic theology. Also, if you're saying here is that
God cannot be expressed in words, then they're just taking it that he cannot be the goal of the Vedas. But the point is absolute truth can't be expressed in words. That means the Vedas in words. That means the Veda is not absolute truth. So why follow the Vedas? So then you're just left with Buddhism again. You know? Does that make sense? But somehow or another, because they're leaving that in place, Shankara doesn't allow that to be discussed. Right? But otherwise, then it doesn't. Okay, does that make sense? Does that lack of sense make sense? Okay. So, and even if they want to be a Brahmavadi, but the point is by jnana and by renunciation. So if they're not doing that, then it's not even a serious Mayavadi. Right? So you can always catch them on that. You know, if they're grumpy about what we do, it's like, hey, you know, if you're not living in a monastery with nothing and just meditating on Tattvamasi all day, you're not actually a Mayavadi. You know, you're just a dabbler in this, you know. So then they would recommend karma or bhakti. Right?
Western life, a certain personal is very present in the way of remaining the way of.
Yeah, yeah. A certain personal, it means it's natural there, the personal, because that's the one it means. But the point is because one will always identify as person, but the problem is what they identify as the person, that's what they make the mistake. The person is the soul. You know what I'm saying? It's not the body. There's a certain combination, just like Prabhupada says the example. The body's not the doctor, the soul's the doctor. Because the body is just a particular combination of elements that's doing a particular thing. But it's the soul who's identifying, has the desire to do that, to be involved in that. So it's the soul who's the doctor. You know, he's not actually a doctor, but it's the soul who thinks the doctor. Because the body is just the body. Is that something? So the thing is we do have the process of getting up to liberation. How what we'll describe and what the Mayavadis will describe as the method is basically the same. So Naishkarmya is the process, the proper performance of duties without a desire for results. Right? So if you want to be successful materially, you have to use that. So successful material means you'll get either good facility or liberation. Right? Those are the two things people look for. Right? So that's what you get by Naishkarmya. Right? So we see the Mimamsakas, then they mention because then that's actually pious. Then you'll get the proper results and then you can enjoy it. Or the other is that you do this and then when you get it, Brahman, then I become God. So you can see is the problem is both of them is it's good up to a point and then when they actually get the result, then it's a problem. Why? Because there's a misidentification. In the sambandha. The sambandha, the jnana's wrong. So therefore, their definition of God, the jiva, the material world, there's something wrong there. Right? But actually, the mechanical process is the same. Right? That you're going to perform sacrifice. You know, austerity, charity. You're going to do what is, engage yourself according to your nature, according to Shastra, without a desire for the result. Right? That any of the schools have to agree, that's the method. Like, you know, unless you get into Charvaka or something, but you know, but anything Vedic will be defining that. And then but once they've gotten that, right? Then it's they misapply it. I'm the enjoyer because they think I'm the controller. You understand? So in other words, their basic problem is in their knowledge of who they are and what's the goal. But the mechanics of the material world, whether using it spiritually or materially, are the same. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. If I use my hand for something in karma, I use it in a certain way. If I use my hand for something in jnana, it's still used in the same way. If I'm used for bhakti, it's still the same way. So the mechanics stay the same. That's why when many times we're defining things, then we'll only talk about the sambandha and the prayojana. The Abhideya doesn't have to be brought up. Because if the Sambandha and Prayojana are right, the Abhideya will be correct. If the Sambandha and the Prayojana are wrong, the Abhideya will be wrong. So it's we don't have to
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So I could say that the common base between the personalities like my body and Western is that the ignorance of the soul.
Ignorance of the soul.
Perspective.
Yeah. It's just easy, because if there is no God, then there's no person that's actually worried about what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? You know, when you're under 18, you always have to worry about what your parents are doing. Right? If you're over 18, you don't have to worry. Does that make sense? Yeah. Huh. Cool. Well, he was... Yes.
So with him in Hinduism, you have...
With?
In Hinduism, you know,
okay.
you die in Varanasi, and you reach moksha.
Okay.
The birth and death. So they see that as liberation. Where do they go from there?
That means you can go to the Brahman. But the problem is because... Brahman is simply that situation for the jiva. See, because the jiva is sat, chit, ananda. So sat means existence. Then chit is knowledge and activities. Ananda is the experience gained from those activities. Right? Means that the individual is gaining that. So if you go to Brahman, you're only dealing with sat or existence. So basically all that one is in an existence where one's not on the material platform. But you're not on the spirit, but you're not on the devotional platform either. So it's just existing, right? And basically, if you think about it, what do we call boring? Boring is when we're only existing. We're not interacting with the environment. Maybe the environment's there, but we don't want to interact, or there's nothing to interact with. So we're only existing, so we call that boredom. So that's what happens, is the soul gets to that platform and gets bored, comes back, but they come back only because they don't know about the spiritual life. They know about spiritual life, they could go forward, but they don't, so they go back. Does that make sense? So that's why, for us, it just means that it's a special place, it's a holy place, but that they get liberation, for us, that's no big deal, because, you know, they'll be back. You know, that's the problem. You know, the mechanistic elements always come back. Okay? That's okay, so then we'll end here. Today's Thursday, right? Yeah, so then tomorrow we'll deal with the Sri Sampradaya. A touch bigger. Right? How long was this? This was 5 pages. Right? Not less. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 pages. Okay, so Ramanuja is a touch more. I think it also gets into their bit into the life. I'm surprised he didn't put anything about the life of Shankara.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
yes.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jayanitai Gaura Premanandi. It's interesting. It's always nicer to already know the subject matter when you go to study it.
Yeah.
Right?